Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about spirituality, healing, energy, alternative medicine, higher levels of consciousness, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun way to nourish your spirit. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hi, everyone. I want to welcome to the Transformation Cafe. I am your host, Robin Misevich, and tonight we're going to be talking about trusting the trickster. Isn't that fun to say? Trusting trickster, to say that fast three times. That's kind of what it's all about. And it's really kind of working into the Bugs Bunny of creativity. I love that. We are going through our different chapters with our cafe book club, and we're covering Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, the same author of Eat, Pray, Love. And tonight, again, we're talking about the section on trust. So we've got a couple of our almost regulars and totally regulars scooting up to the table tonight. We have Dr. Kim back visiting us tonight. But Dr. Kim, how are you tonight?
Good evening, everyone. I'm delighted to be here.
Delighted to have you here. And how are you doing?
I'm doing magically.
Oh, good answer. That was a great answer. Okay. I wish I had a little bell. Ding, ding. I know. Ding, ding, ding. That's a good one. Okay. And my sister, Amy Frost, is joining us again tonight. She is a change agent. She is a life and spiritual coach. She really kind of helps people with their spiritual growth and creativity and just all kinds of ways of just really living the life you want to live. So, Miss Amy, how are you tonight?
I'm good. I have to say I'm really a professional trickster.
She's a professional. Oh, I like that. You're a trickster agent. How about that, being a trickster agent?
Nice.
Life agent, joy agent, trickster agent. Okay. People are like, what the heck is this trickster? What is this trickster all about? We are going to get into it. So on our last episode, it was 279. We were going to be, actually, I'm sorry, 278. We talked about persistence with Big Magic and really learning to be committed to our creativity and our creative life. That as humans, we're automatically creators because we're hardwired that way. And it's never too late to become in tune with your creativity. So I really want to kind of just take a second to really check in with Amy and see what's going on with her. So any kind of ahas or anything that came up from last week when it came to being persistent?
For me, it's really about being persistent with being patient and allowing instead of trying to hunt things down, because I'm really good at making things happen. And I think there's so many great seeds that are planted. It's about not digging those seeds up until they start, you know, start taking off. And then I can weed the plants if they get too close together, grow. So I think that's persistence for me is a little different probably than a lot of people, because I'm the most tenacious person I know. So I think persistence for me really takes the form of patience and allowing.
And that's really great. And it's kind of a nice segue with how we're going to be getting into the chapter of trust. So how about you, Dr. Kim? When it comes to persistence, what have you learned when it comes to just embracing and playing with creativity?
My lesson, especially the past few days, has been in trust. The universe has my back. Trust that the universe is at least a step ahead of me, if not more, and trust that it will all come together in the right time, in the right way. I've been on deadline for a couple of book chapters and was really tearing my hair out, pulled an all-nighter, and it was only when I just said, okay, I'm exhausted, I'm putting it away for now, and I woke up. And things within an hour fell right into place. It was actually magical.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Well, yeah, just like surrendering to something bigger than me. And I think that's one thing that Elizabeth has really been talking about this whole book club. It's really that just right from the get-go that, you know, ideas are living things, and they're really seeking to have a partnership with us, looking to someone to basically help them to be bringing these ideas, these different kinds of passions into the world, passions and curiosities. We'll talk about that tonight. And just ways that we can be bringing that in. And right off the bat, on page 202, we started talking about how she has a friend, Dr. Robin Wall Timmerman. She's a botanist and author of environmental biology. at UNLY, which is the College of Environmental Science and Forestry in Syracuse, New York. And Dr. Kim also is a professor there. Aren't you, Dr. Kim?
I am.
Yeah, which is really exciting that, you know, it's like, is this a synchronicity or what? This can turn out to be very cool. And one thing that Dr. Robin talks about is she asks her students at the beginning of the semester is just the question, you know, do you love nature? And, of course, all these students are just very much wanting to be the changers of the world, really helping the planet and helping us to be just in a place where we have a lot more balance and conscious living on the planet. And, of course, everybody raises their hands. And then the second question she asks is, do you believe that nature loves you? And automatically everybody's hands went down. So she, Dr. Robin was talking about it's so important to realize that we've got a problem already, because there's a consciousness out there thinking that we're disconnected to nature, we're disconnected to these things, where we're giving just a lost sense of conversation with the planet and with all that there is in the world that are living things. So what did you think of that, Amy, when we started out with that? I know she had read that and just called me up immediately and say, oh, that's Dr. Robin, you know. And, you know, if you go back to some of my past shows, we have Blair Wisdom, and I'm a nature intuitive. So when I read this, probably like, you know, of course, this is where we are. But it was so, for me, it was very refreshing in a way that really reminds me of the reason that we just really need to be out there reminding everybody of having things connected, you know, be it an idea, be it connected to the planet, being a connected to the things that really matter to us. So I really love to get Amy's spin on what she thought about that.
Well, it's interesting because there's big magic happening within the big magic. Having, you know, mm-hmm. Dr. Robin, and of course your name being Robin, and having the college that Dr. Kim happens to teach being right in the, you know, in this chapter too, I just find it really fascinating. And the point here, and I love how she winds everything together. She talks about, you know, do you love nature? Well, of course. Well, does nature love you? And she talks about the energy and the conversation back and forth, which really leads to about you loving whatever your form of creation on the planet is. So when it boils down to it, it's great that she's talking about nature, but that's kind of a metaphor really for really loving what it is that it allowing it to love you too. Like as a writer, you know that you love writing, but let it love you too. And she talks about nature providing man, nature provides the seed, man provides the garden, and each is grateful for each other's help. And so that it's a relationship. It isn't just one-sided. And that she moves into that from about not being tortured by your art, and really about being addicted to suffering, and that most people, and we have a culture that talks about that and how that you have to suffer for your art. And so that's a lot of how she starts that out. And then on page 215, she said, I have chosen to trust, which is simply love, love over suffering always. How about them apples? Instead of, oh, my God, my business is hard, or, you know, this relationship is hard, is allowing that love to go back and forth and trusting on that love.
Yeah, just to step back just a second, what Dr. Robin had said is just they are missing out on the potential to become co-creators with life. The exchange of love between Earth and the people calls forth the creative gifts of both. The earth is not indifferent to us, but rather calling our gifts in return for hers, a reciprocal nature of life and creativity. And as Amy had said, nature provides the seeds, man provides the garden, and each is grateful for the other's help. And that's an overall theme for this whole coming together and learning about trust in ways that really help us to just feel nurtured and to nurture the things that are reciprocal for each other. So any thoughts on that, Dr. Kim?
I was really struck by the honor of being asked to be of service. So that the partnership is actually reciprocal. It takes both of us. And, you know, I'm honored when people ask for my help. I'm incredibly honored when the universe asks for my help. So it just kind of struck me in a honorable way, I guess.
And it's interesting because I think that's a good point, Kim, because I think we think about that it's always about us out there asking and not about it's asking us. Wow. What a concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What do you mean? Who, always... me? Me? Little old me?
One of my favorite Mother Teresa quotes is that, you know, God never gives us any more than we can handle. There's a second part of that that most people don't know. The second part is, sometimes I wish he didn't trust me this much.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I haven't
known
that.
Well, you know.
Good.
Yeah, but the universe knows what it knows when it knows, right?
So, I get it, but we're still human, and it was like, oh, no, me?
Yeah, exactly. Little old me.
So, Robin, I want to take us to this. So she talks a lot about the struggle, and you all can read that about, you know, struggle and to write and whatever your craft is, and that is the cultural norm about how it has to be hard. And she says on page 218, she talks about stubborn gladness. She says, all I can tell you for certain that in my entire life has been shaped by an early decision to reject the cult of artistic martyrdom and instead to place my trust in the crazy notion that my work loves me as much as I love it, and it wants to play with me as much as I want to play with it, and that the source of love and play is boundless.
Right, right.
I see that, Robin, you, when you work with flowers, when you decorate Christmas trees, you are so in that place.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because people ask me, you know, because lots of times they say, well, what are you going to do? And I look at all the different things that are in front of me, and I said, well, we'll see. Because I just want it to be an organic process with me. I mean, there's certain basics, you know, you put the lights on, and then you put, you know, the ribbons on, and then you put the ornaments on or whatever you're going to work with. But a lot of it, when it comes to the positioning and how it feels, how it feels, I go a lot by how things feel when I'm putting something together. I think, and I've heard a lot of creative people when it comes to display work and painting and things like that, it's about how does it feel. And I think that's so important because that definitely is going to translate to the next person, because it's not just something that's a visual thing. It's using the senses on a lot of different ways. So part of the way that I do all my stuff. So I want to go back real quick, though, because like there's quite a bit of the chapter that's dedicated to this whole concept of suffering. And and one thing that Elizabeth had talked about was one of the ladies that she really loves to talk to, her name was Kate Arnold Ratiff, and she's an upcoming writer. And Katie had shared with Elizabeth that she once had a professor that had said, unless you are emotionally uncomfortable while you were writing, you will never produce anything of value. And I really just wanted to put that out there. Yes, we're going to move past that pretty quickly, but there's a lot of beliefs out there that are just centuries old about, you know, suffering for your work, suffering for your creativity. And I really think we're just, you know, here we're talking about the Transformation Cafe. We're definitely moving into a new mindset, a new energy on the planet, where people are just not buying into those old this belief system. Because all it is a belief that's the way it needs to be. Because Katie goes on after, I think it was a couple decades of kind of holding on to that, but she let it go because she had a story in her that it was a novel that she wrote, but she just had a lot of pleasure in writing the book. Yes, it was work, but she had a lot of pleasure in it at the same time. And if you go later in the chapter, Elizabeth is a real good friend of Brené Brown, and Brené has really learned to be able to find the joy in how things work for her instead of making it more of an academic way of writing a paper or a thesis. She decided that she really realized, you know, being in a Texan, you know, like she was fourth generation Texan, she knows how to tell a story. So she would just go from being a storyteller and using that as her platform for being able to create a book. And she actually just had friends of hers, they would get together and go, you know, go on a long weekend. And that's what Brené would do. She'd just basically get up and talk about the different aspects of the book. And her two friends were writing notes like crazy and making it to where they would go ahead and share with the different stuff. She'd write it, you know, she'd share and then write stuff down. And next thing you know, she's got it where she's got the things that she runs into the other room, puts down the ideas and the voice that she had it come through, and be able to go back, read it again, and just have this process where she was being the storyteller and being able to just have this impactful, just present moment way of being able to write and have it be something that people really get, because it's really coming from a personal place within her and being able to utilize that. And boy, I just thought that was such a great model of ways that, you know, use what you're best at. Use in the way that you're connecting to your creativity.
Go ahead. I want to make a point about that, though. Her first couple of books were not that way.
Right, exactly. She was very academic about the way she wrote them. Mm-hmm.
That she wrote these wonderful books, but they didn't come easily for her. She sweats and struggles and suffers through writing process and always has. And I love this. You know, Dr. Kim, I had read this earlier. She and I have been doing some academic work lately. And she says, hey, this is Brene Brown. Hey, I came from a background in academia, which is deeply entrenched in martyrdom, as you must labor and suffer for years in solitude to produce work that only four people will ever read.
Exactly.
And then she really got this idea of the trickster versus the martyr. And so that's when she, you know, that she started this process of bringing in friends and then leaning on the storytelling. You know, it doesn't mean that the work wasn't intense. And I love how she says this, that never again will I write about the subject of human connection while suffering in isolation, and that a lighthearted process does not necessarily need to result in a lighthearted product.
Right, right. And that's what I'm talking about when it comes to just these new beliefs, new ways of being able to bring just these inspirational, just magnificent ways of being able to express ourselves through and have it be something that's just out there for people. Because, Brené's latest book has just been a really wonderful book. I know Dr. Kim had said that she had gone out to go ahead and buy Big Magic, and it was sold out, so she wasn't being able to get it. And I know Brené's having that same experience with her book. It's getting sold out because people just really can hear the authentic voice that's within the subject matter, and they're really getting it and just having it be a model for being able to be out there being creative as well. So that's exciting to know we've got it going on that way. That's very, very exciting.
So, Robin, can I back up a little bit and then come back to this? Because I think that it's important to talk about the difference between the martyr and the trickster. And then I'd like to bring him to this conversation, because we have definitely lived through this since April and these processes, these chapters that we've been working on. And he talks about the martyr versus the trickster. He said, in order to let go of the addiction to creative suffering, you must reject the way of the martyr and embrace the way of the trickster. And said, here's a quick summary here. The martyr energy is dark, solemn, fundamentalist, austere, unforgiving, and profoundly rigid. The trickster energy is light, slight, transgressive, primal, and endlessly shape-shifting. And it's more of light and fun, but not necessarily goofy. And so, so you coming from the trickster point of view instead of the martyr point of view, Kim, I kind of, you know, if you feel comfortable, just dive in. But I really saw that you and I did that, and as we worked with Dr. Lynn on our third chapter, the three of us together, that we very much moved from the martyr to the trickster pretty fluidly, and that the last one was so much easier than the first two. Do you want to address any of that?
Yes, I would say you've got it exactly right, Amy. And I remember when we first started, we were with Marianne Rademacher, who wrote Live with Intention, one of my favorite statements of life. And Marianne was like, only work for 5 minutes and then do something different, play. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Only do it for 5 minutes? We have 5 chapters to write. What are you talking about? And you got into it way earlier than I did. And I was like, you can't get things done in 5 minutes. And we magically did. We magically did. And one of the things I appreciated was when we got to this last chapter, each of us knew what we were really good at. And if you recall, you were the project manager. You kept us on task. You would tell who's got the ball and what we needed to do. And Lynn had her piece and I had mine. And, I mean, it almost was effortless. It almost was effortless, which for anything academic is almost an oxymoron. So I learned a whole lot, Amy, by working with you. So thank you for the honor.
Well, and one of the most important things where we had a very short fuse and a very tough project, and we were able to come together, like you're saying, in that way. And there were things that got lost along the way in confusion, but we never did it in a struggle way. We never attacked each other. We would make a joke about it and go, all right, so where is it now? And, okay, maybe, you know, we had stress defined twice. You know, in the key terms, like, okay, maybe we just really like stress, or maybe we need to get rid of half our stress. And, you know, so we would find ways to make it fun instead of, oh, my God, you know, we've got this peer review and, you know. But we just took things, right? It's like, oh, the trickster's here again. You don't have to play martyr. And I think it's going to breeze through review because of that.
Yes, great energy. Thank you.
So kind of goes back into what Elizabeth was talking about, when it's very important to be able to lighten up and making sure that you're really looking at things from just a different perspective. Elizabeth had an opportunity when her first story, it was a short story that she had ever written, was called Pilgrims, and it was in Esquire magazine. I think it was back in the early 90s. And she had went ahead and submitted it, and Esquire picked it up and was interested in go ahead and publishing it. But they wound up having to cut down on that one magazine they had with it. They had wound up having one of their advertisers pull out, and so they had to make the magazine a little thinner. And so they said that she could go ahead, and they were interested in her still publishing her Pilgrim story, but she was going to have to edit it down. And what I thought was so great about that lightening up was the fact that At first, she just thought to herself, how can I, you know, every word, I've been working on this for a year and a half, and how could I edit down? There's like no word I would want to take out of it. But the guy who had talked to her and just said, well, you know, we might be able to use it in the future, but you also have to think about the fact that the guy who loves it may not be, working for Esquire in the future, and that this might be, you know, the only time that you can get it published.
Yep.
So she really had to put her pride aside and look at what was it going to mean, you know, what was it going to take for her to be able to do that. She did decide to go ahead and edit it. And what she found through that editing process was the story changed, not necessarily in the content, but in the tone and the way that it got put out, because she literally had to, you know, take a story out to be able to have it fit into the magazine. And it really liberated her to being able to liberate herself in just a different way of looking at her words, to where, you know, she goes on in the next section to say, it ain't your baby, you are its baby. So when it comes to being able to hold something and have it be changed, recognizing just like we've been talking out for, you know, through this whole book and this whole theme, is that, you know, it's a partnership in working with the creativity and what you're putting out there, recognizing that there's that give and take with the information and how you're putting it and how it wants to go out into the world. And the thing that was really great about that, just like big magic, was the fact that she cut it down and was able to put it out there. It gave her access to being able to get her agent that really has helped her to be able to move forward with all the other work that she's meant to do. And she said that if she had her pride on that, she never would have had it published, because the guy who was interested in it wound up leaving Esquire in a matter of 3 or 4 months later. So that would have been shelved, and she never would have been published in the way that she was, and moving her forward with her career and her creativity. So it just shows being able to just own it on whatever level you need. You have an opportunity to change it. Be able to say yes. That's another thing, that when it comes to trusting, you know, the process, trusting the universe, trusting your ideas, that they're out there and really helping you to do what you need to do with all that. So what did you think of that, Amy?
Well, I think it's also, you say, trusting your own gut. And she could have gotten a lot of advice from people. No, do not sacrifice your artistic, you know, right, because it's blah, 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 blah. And she's just like, she really got, no, this is what I need to do. And on page 232, she talks about this, and from about it being your work, you're in the sacredness of your work. He says, what you produce is not necessarily always sacred. I realize just because you think it's sacred, what is sacred is the time you spend working on the project, and what the time does to expand your imagination, and what that expanded imagination does to transform your life. The more lightly you can pass that time,
the brighter your existence becomes. And I think, like with Dr. Lynn and Dr. Kim and I, it was really, there was sacredness in a relationship too. So it wasn't just, you know, the chapter that we were creating, but the relationships that we were forging also that were sacred.
Yeah, and well this goes along. Yeah, well said. Very well said. If you go to page 237, she talks about a passion versus curiosity, that whole little section in there, and that curiosity is the secret. And if you look at what's going into that whole process of once Elizabeth had written E, Pray, Love, she was really looking for her next big thing. And what happened for her was, and she said, sometimes you just have to go by something you're curious about. And she had just moved into a new home, an older home in New Jersey, in a small town. And for whatever reason, she thought to herself she might want to start a garden. And she followed that, which is in it. She said it was just a small thought of like, it'd be kind of nice maybe to start a garden. It wasn't this huge idea or anything, but it was just kind of a nudge of something for her to kind of look at that and be able to have it as a part of her home. And she just realized after she started, you know, planting things she was interested in and looking at everything, that she started doing research about the different flowers that she had and where did they come from and looking at the history about all that. And, you know, one thing led to another, and it wound up being, you know, her next novel. So through just all the deep history of plants and where they came from, you know, where they originated from. So it wanted us just taking in this totally different direction that she said a couple of years before that, I never would have thought of anything like that. So just by following those little nudges and cues to myself and being willing to go on a scavenger hunt, it really led her to her passion just because she was willing to go in something that she just kind of had a little bit of a curiosity about. And I thought that was just such a great thing because when you're working from curiosity, it just works on a quieter scale, she says. It's on a slower scale, and yet it still has big magic to it. It's not a matter of necessarily thinking we have to follow our passion. It's being able to follow something that nudges us. And how wonderful that, you know, it's just listening to the small, quiet voices in our stuff. So it makes me think of Wayne Dyer. He had written a book called Real Magic. It was actually Real Magic. And that's one of the first books that I really had read that really helped me to listen to the small voice inside of yourself, that creative voice that just says, you know, hey, maybe you should go look at this or maybe you should go look at that. And being able to just say yes to that because it was just small, simple steps in the slow direction. Just like saying it was slow and quiet little nudges that you start following it and it can turn into this bigger passion that you didn't even know that you had by just doing it in quiet ways that seem to be, you know, to me it's like being delighted in something that really kind of just pushes you in a new direction you would have never even thought about just because you're willing to say yes to that. So I wanted to make sure that we have that as a part of, you know, what we're talking about tonight. So Dr. Kim, have you had things like that where it was just this simple little nudge that turned into a big thing, that, you know, down the road?
Yeah, time and time again. And I'm seeing it more and more in who crosses my path. I mean, we meet, you know, come across at Dunkin' Donuts or wherever, lots of people, and I'm paying more attention to who I'm nudged to really engage with as opposed to just be pleasant with. And I've met some really wonderful people as a result. In fact, I wasn't planning to have Thanksgiving at the Episcopal Church in a community on Thursday, but as of today, that's what I decided based on one of those nudges that I got. And who knows who I'll meet on Thursday.
And that's exactly what I was just going to say. Who can know what that's going to really lead you into just by being willing to say yes and being curious to see what will happen with that. So I really don't want to end the show without talking about trusting your lobster. So, Amy, you want to talk about that?
Let me add one thing that's really important, and then we have to read the lobster story or listen to it. It's fabulous and hilarious. But as they're on page 238, let's go back to the curiosity. And this is your assignment for the week, my friend. They said, curiosity only ever asks one simple question. Is there anything you're interested in? Anything, even a little bit, no matter how mundane and small. The answer need not set your life on fire or make you quit your job or force you to change your religion or send you to a fugitive state. It just has to capture your attention for a moment. That's a clue. Keep following those clues. And then go read the lobster story.
Yeah, and then go read the lobster story. So I think we'll kind of keep that as a cliffhanger, because I think we definitely want to talk about that, and that'll move us into
divinity. For sure.
that'll be a nice glide into divinity. They're like, what, divinity from a lobster? Yes, divinity from a lobster. So we really want to thank Dr. Kim and Amy for joining us tonight. And, you know, as always, 30 minutes is just a little bit of a taste of what we can be doing with the Cafe Book Club and really looking at big magic. We really want to invite everybody to go to the forum, questions, comments, all different kinds of stuff. And let's just keep the conversation going. Look forward to seeing what everybody wants to share through the forum line. So we want to thank you again for joining us, and we will see you next week with our lobster at the cafe. Talk to you soon.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.